This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. It is the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport London. Another week of twists and turns for Brentford. It's never boring, that's for sure. It's been another home game and 7 days struck off that Griffin Park countdown. We've also had a trip up north and a transfer window to dissect and review, as well as look ahead to that final run-in for the Mighty Bees. Plenty to talk about here on the Brentford Fan Show. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from Besotted. Robin Hood, Michael, hello.
Hello.
And Dave, XG Anderson, hello.
Hi, Matt. Hello.
Guys, on my notes here, you've written the B team. Come on.
Well, no, I think we're getting some more and more chances in the first team, but we're still very much on our development path across. We've had some help from Kevin O'Connor, from Brian Reamer. We haven't quite got the call from Thomas Frank yet. So yeah, we're sporadic appearance. We're doing what we did against Leicester City. We're fielding some B teamers in order to give them even more experience as they continue to soar in value, hopefully.
But, yeah, hopefully a winning result and not a lose.
Yeah, you don't go out of it 1-0 down.
Yeah.
No. Gents, okay, well, look, we're going to get on to all the action from the week and all the other news. Like we say, transfer talk, plenty coming up there. Surprising little deadline day move, of course, for that Oxford duo. Looking forward to talking about that one. But first, a little cheeky opening question to begin the show. Because, gents, what is the one thing you'll take away from the first month of the decade?
Christmas wasn't kind to me. That's what I'll take away. I just literally all the Brentford games I went to, and the alienating my running and my fitness, and too much times down the pub and too much food. Yeah, I just across January I felt, you know, my fitness had gone down from my five-a-side and things like that. And all this was in a good cause, because I got to go see lots of Brentford games. But yeah, so that's the one thing. In terms of a football perspective, I'm very, very hopeful for the future. That's one thing I'm taking out of January.
Good stuff.
I'll take that.
Yeah, fair play. For me, I guess all I took away from January is Malta's quite nice in January. Went there for a few days. Lovely, quite surprisingly mild at January. You'd be surprised.
Really?
A little bit of diving out there. Yeah, just beautiful. Yeah, go there in January. It's fine.
What does Malta offer? I don't really know much about the country.
Oh, Matt. So Game of Thrones, there's a lot of that film there.
Well, that's Northern Ireland, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of sort of walled cities in Malta.
Not beautiful. Seen a single episode, so couldn't.
Well,
you're
missing out, Matt. You are missing out.
No. That's the theme song, just in case.
Game of Thrones podcast.
Yeah, this is the first time I think anything Brentford related has ever started with Game of Thrones and Malta. And our B team performance is slipping very, very rapidly.
So we've got to recover this. But yeah, just a little trip to Malta. Really enjoyed that. And that's my big January takeaway. It's great there in January.
Okay.
How's your January been, Matt?
It's been okay, busy. I won't lie to you. It's been extremely busy, yes. So, you know.
Hopefully a bit of relief then to come in on a Monday and have a talk a load of nonsense with a couple of guys from Besotted then.
Absolutely. Life is looking good at Love Sport Radio, especially on a Monday evening at 8 p.m. here on Love Sport
Amen.
London. Gents, we are going to talk football now, because this is, of course, a football fan show. And we're going to get onto the whole game, of course, later on in the show, but we have to get that little elephant out of the room early doors. Everybody was buzzing, of course, about the game on Tuesday last week, of course. Nottingham Forest arriving at Griffin Park. What happened?
We lost 1-0. Let's move on. yeah, it was. I think it was built up as such a big game. Especially considering the Leicester FA Cup game beforehand, and having to balance our squad with those two games. It was built very, very big. And the performance and the result was admittedly quite a letdown. And I think there was a really sort of anxious and dissatisfied feeling amongst the Brentford faithful. So I'm not entirely... Well, we kind of know what happened, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We just got sort of outmanaged in a game. But yeah, you're right, though. The build-up was just massive. It felt huge because we had that Leicester tie. There was so much focus on what we do after that. It just felt like it took ages to come. And then when it did come, the disappointment just massively outweighed the build up and then all the hype. But Forest just outmanaged us, didn't they? They were really deep. They knew what they were doing. They uh, Yeah, it was pretty tricky, actually.
I had some pretty choice words for a couple of their players, let's put it that way.
Well, I've heard the term dark arts get used a lot on this station with certain fan shows. And is it fair to say that Nottingham Forest employed those dark arts for huge swathes of the game?
I think that's a very good way of putting
it.
I think they invented it. It was a masterful execution in how to steal a 3 points from Griffin Park, essentially. I think the first thing we can dissect from it is that we weren't at our A game. Us as Brentford, I don't think we were as strong as we could have been in terms of our performance. That's from my perspective anyway. And I think Nottingham Forest did a job. They came to Griffin Park, they did a job, they walked away with 3 points.
Yeah, they did a brilliant job. I think they knew what they wanted to do. They had a plan. And I think that we're probably going to come to this later, but there are teams that understand how to beat Brentford and there are teams that don't understand how to beat Brentford or know what to do when they come up. And there's a certain set of things you've got to do if you want to come out of the game and win. Mm. And Forest did a lot of them and they came out of the game and won.
Yeah.
That's it, really.
Do you think the whole fact that, really, for the first time, I'd say, this season properly, with the feeling around Griffin Park and Brentford that, crikey, actually, we might actually do this, that because this was billed as such a huge game for the first time really this season, maybe it got on top of the players, on top of the fans a bit too much?
Yeah, no, I don't think it did. I think the fans were intent, like we were sort of looking forward to it and really keen, but I don't think it affected the players in any way at all. I think Robin doesn't think there was a good performance. I don't think the performance is that bad. I think we just came up against a really stiff team and they were solid at the back and just sort of managed us into areas we didn't want to be. But they had a really good tactic, actually. It was Amiobi out on the right on Rico Henry. He was a free ball all the time. I think we all felt like we can't go behind against this team, and if we do, we're going to struggle and not get back. And unfortunately, a deflected goal and Cash from Cash, and it just went in, and it was kind of, there was inevitability from there, wasn't there?
It was so frustrating because we said before the game we can't concede first because Nottingham Forest are ruthless when it comes to defending leads. They are so good at keeping teams at bay once they've gone ahead. They sit deep, they press from deep areas. They're very, very strong in that regard. So when we conceded first and the manner of which the goal, it was a deflected shot, it looped into the bottom corner, I think. It was such an ugly goal to concede.
But and brilliant for them. They're all worth the same amount, aren't they?
Exactly, unfortunately. It was not our finest hour. And I think it's a lesson. And thankfully, Thomas Frank said after the game, we need to learn lessons from this. If he'd have come out and said, the stats show we should have got 3 points, yada yada yada, I'd have been worried. But the fact that he acknowledged the performance in the team of our opponents, I think, is a very strong sign. It shows that hopefully we will learn from that moving forward.
I also liked from Thomas Frank. Now, I know this is a very friendly show and we get fans on from opposing teams and it's all very nice and we're all friendly. We go to pubs when we go to away games. But I did like the little needle after the game with Sabrina Mushi, of course, in the centre circle with the rest, and Frank actually waving his finger at him, just going, no, don't give me any of that.
See, I think Lamucci gets away with it because he has a foreign-sounding name and he looks very suave. And I think there's a bit of... I think he loves to mix it, actually. I don't think he's you'd associate him with sort of free-flowing, beautiful football. He's completely hiding behind his and getting away with it a little bit, and Frank wasn't having any of it, and I think it's impressive that he stood up to him and told him what was what, to be honest.
But to be fair, he did come to Griffin Park and do what teams hadn't been able to do for six games, which is leave with a point, with at least a point. And that was the frustrating thing, because we've been so good for so long at home, six home league wins on the spin. It's a fortress, Griffin Park, and to leave with a point or 3 points, you have to do something really quite good in order to beat us. So that's why I would say that we weren't at our A game, is because a team was able to get all 3 points off of us, not just one.
Yeah, the A game, so the dark art stuff. So quickly, we've just got a quick stat on sort of pure possession time. So out of 90 minutes, Forest had 16 minutes of pure possession, which is just, it's just so low. It just shows that they don't want the ball. They're just there to sort of waste time, sort of niggle at us and just make sure we sort of run out of ideas and not...
Was there 50 minutes of dead time, did you say?
Yeah, that's it. So there's nothing going on in this game. You can tell they have a game plan. It's just whether you sort of fall for it or whether you do something different or whether you just sort of fall down the path that they want you to go down. And we kind of did, didn't we?
So you told me that stat and I just thought, so really, for 90 minutes we watched a game and for 50 minutes nothing was happening. All I remember from that was the frustration and the not quite getting that pass through and not quite creating that chance. And obviously... they're just relentless time wasting.
Yeah, it was really bad, wasn't it?
My goodness, it was atrocious. Absolutely atrocious.
Yeah. It's amazing how that can happen at this level of football, because you don't really see that in the Premier League, do you?
No.
You can't get away with it in the Premier League.
No.
It's and their goalkeeper got booked in the 24th minute, I think, for time wasting. Now that gives you an indication of it wasn't just sort of okay, we're gonna time waste later on in the game just to try and run the clock down. They were just so keen on not letting anyone have the ball, not just themselves but us.
Yeah, very frustrating. But yeah, as I said, they came around the points and it was the plan and it worked. It's just do we need stronger refereeing or do we need stronger assistance? That's yeah, something's got to change. But otherwise, we're going to keep getting done like that.
Yeah. The age-old debate. Okay, gents. Well, the good thing, the positive is that we get to the weekend, Brentford win, Forest lose. So, bosh. There we go. Exactly. We are going to no longer talk about the Nottingham Forest game. No. That is over.
Yeah,
next
that's
up,
in the past.
It's in the past. It's gone. It's finished. It's done. Next up, we've got Robin Hood and Little Dave's Merry Roundup. It is the Transfer Window Edition.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
Robin Hood, Robin Hood, riding through the glen. Robin Hood, Robin Hood, with his band of men. Feared by the bad, loved by the good. Robin Hood, Robin Hood.
Tell you what, we've reached new heights here on the Brentford Fan Show. Have that, Hawkins.
Yes.
Have that if you're listening over on Love Sport, Hawkins. It's a new sheriff in town now. It's the Brentford Fan Show, if you weren't already aware, here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from Besotting, Robin Hood, McMichael, of course, and Dave XG Anderson. Right now, we are on a little merry roundup of the transfer window. Of course, it has been deadline day since we were last on the show. Plenty going on, chaps, no less. Two players coming in from Oxford United, Robin.
Yeah, it's usually the other way around. We usually lose players. So I think back to the days, I think was it 2016, I think, where we got rid of, when we sold Hotter, Dean and Collan to Birmingham City all on deadline day. The Birmingham Three, yeah. And to go from that and those situations, I was sitting in the pub with Dave Laney Lane and Billy the Bee and Edward Hedward, and it was just such a depressing sign. Mm. Now, this time, we've signed two players, and they're two really genuinely exciting players. So for those of you that haven't heard, it's Shandon Baptiste and Tarek Fosu-Henry. So they're two, a midfielder and a winger, respectively, from Oxford United. The fee was rumoured to be around £3 million, yeah. Although, Carl Robinson? Is the manager, yeah. has said that there's no
he
way
said
they
it was a lot more than
it was
that.
There a lot more than that, and that may be £4 million. But it's a really, really interesting signing, considering I think what happened against Nottingham Forest, where we had some decent players on the bench, and Thomas Frank only made one substitute and brought Emiliano on, and that was it. So I think that was indicative, and there are some conspiracy theories that maybe Thomas Frank was trying to suggest that he didn't have a strong enough bench and nudge to the powers that be to go and get some more players. But I think we needed these players regardless. Cameron Mococho's out with an injury. We don't know when he's going to be back. And we need another wide player because I think Joel Valencia isn't quite hitting it. And we need a bit more of an option there. But they're both really exciting signings. I can't wait to see them in action.
It was before deadline day that it was named, wasn't it? Because it was revealed that Oxford was selling these players to an unnamed club.
They were having their medicals at an unnamed club. Yeah. And there were such strong ties linking them to Brentford that it was always going to be us. So it was probably one of the most forecast, and obvious transfers I can remember in Brentford's history.
Really, yeah, Baptiste has been on the radar for a while before I think he got his ACL about a year and a half ago now.
Was that against us?
I think it was, yeah. It was us v Oxford in the Cup, wasn't it? Yes, yeah. So it was a serious injury, but I think they were really interested back then. And if he didn't have that injury, he probably would have signed a lot sooner. We may not have Drew Yearwood. You don't know how the squad sort of builds itself, but we've got him eventually, and hopefully he's going to be a really good addition. I mean, the feeling we had when Birmingham stole those players, it was absolutely heartbreaking, and these are pretty much two of Oxford's best players. They're so strong for them. They've had really good seasons.
Yeah.
It is heartbreaking, but this is the growth of Brentford. We do this to other clubs now instead of getting it done to us. But don't want to speak too soon. The summer could be pretty brutal. So
depending on fortunes.
Yeah, so, but I think, we'll be graceful in sort of taking other clubs' players, but this is what it is now. I mean, we're going for a title. We're trying to get promoted. You've got to strengthen them.
And also, it's not as if they're young players, and they're coming to a club that's very progressive and that's going to help them. It's not as if they're coming for massive shed loads of cash and they're just going to be sat on the bench and not developed and then farmed off to another League One. So this is a really good opportunity for these players. Tarek Foss has only been at Oxford since moving from Charlton for 6 months. And Shandon Baptiste has obviously had many suitors this season. He's been very, very good. So this is a really progressive signing for Brentford. This is something that, like Dave said, we've had done to us before, and now we are the plunderers. We are the ones going and searching for jewels in League One, and it's brilliant.
So those are the two players that did come in. I imagine generally you're quite happy with the January window, been happy with the window since the start of the summer, really. Mm. Was there anyone else, any other players that you maybe would have liked Thomas Frank to have drafted in as well?
I mean, in an ideal world, I'd have Tumani Diagaraga back to provide Norgard with some cover in defence as the big stalwart defensive midfield. I still think we're a light one midfielder. I think Drew Yearwood is obviously coming through and progressing. But I think we could maybe have done with another defensive midfielder, because especially with Camo's injury, and Shandon Baptiste is a bit more box to box, as I understand it. So I think we're still maybe light one player in there. But I've got faith in Yearwood to be able to progress quickly, and he's certainly shown that in the two FA Cup games he's played.
Yeah, I'm not so keen on Yearwood. I don't think he's as reliable in these sort of Championship games as I think in the Cup games. He looks like he's lively, but I think. You need much more composure there, and we do need someone who's a bit more mature and sort of probably a bit more sort of dominant as well, similar to probably like a Bielik, one of my favourite players.
I knew it was going to be that.
Derby. But yeah. I think that's what you kind of want. Yearwood still is very raw, and I think you can see that in his games. He just sort of vacates the space. One minute he'll be in defensive midfield, next minute he'll be on the edge of the box, and he's not quite as disciplined as we need just yet. So even with Camo fit, I felt like we needed another midfielder, a sort of a deeper one, and Baptiste is probably like an eight, isn't he? Sort of pushing forward a little bit more. Not quite that DM. So we might need some, but I mean, we'll have to make it work.
You just notice when Norgard's not in the side. I certainly do. I think he provides that presence and that screen in front
of him. That is a hard position. If we think the only person that's probably better than Norgard in the entire league is probably Calvin Phillips at Leeds. So it's a hard position to get someone to be at that level and then not even be your first team player. So maybe we just sort of fudge it and get through with what we have, and it works.
So I'll play there. I played there a couple of 11-a-side games in school. I reckon I've still got it. Short-term contract.
And that's worrying, isn't it?
The key to every promotion as well. Yeah. Fudging it. There we go. That's what we do. That's what we do at Brentford. Those are the incomings, Robin. Some outgoings.
Yeah, we have some outgoings. So I think this is quite sad, actually. I think he's far better and gets far less credit than he should, is Josh Clark. So he's basically a utility player for Brentford. He's been with the club for 9 years, and he's played pretty much every position you could possibly think of. He started out as a right winger, then we moved to right back. He played a few games at left back, and then played a few games left wing. A couple of games up front as an auxiliary striker. He probably played in goal. I don't know, but he's been a long servant for 9 years at the club. He's pacey. He's got two good feet. He's got a good work ethic. Probably not the best touch of a footballer, and not as good in possession. And unfortunately, he's been released. Now, he was released this January at mutual termination of his contract, so he's free to negotiate with another club. So although it appears a little bit brutal that, you know, we just released him and terminated his contract, he did get a really good send-off, a really good mention, a rundown of the list of all the stuff he's done across 9 years at the club. Yeah. And I wish him really all the best for the future, because I think he's just never had that fully cemented starting place in the side across those 9 years. But he loves scoring against QPR, so he'll always go down.
He's going to go down a legend, isn't he? I think he's just a victim of one of those players that don't really have one position, and then you kind of, are they that good in one position? You sort of try and fill them in everywhere. Probably more like a poor man Sergi Canos in a way. Like, he sort of can play in those four positions, and you never really sort of settle down. But yeah, we're going to miss him. I think his sort of defensive side of his game just came on massively, didn't it? He started off with a bit of a liability, but then filled in a right back and left back, and he was just a really good player. And someone's going to get a good player, though. We're thinking about his level. I think he can play in the Championship for a side.
Absolutely.
It's just not going to be a team pushing for promotion. Maybe at the bottom of the Championship, or sort of middle if he's lucky. But it'll probably be League One, really.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll see him back in Griffin Park one day.
Yeah.
It's funny when those players are in limbo, isn't it? You kind of think, what do they do? They're just chilling out.
it's a difficult position. Yeah. But we've also had a couple of other outgoings as well. Tom Field has left for Dundee United. Yeah. And best of luck to him. A few good games, a couple of goals in one game for us against, was it Eastleigh in the FA Cup? Talented player?
Yeah, he is. I think I remember watching, I think I saw him play against Man United in a pre-season friendly, or sort of one of those early B team matches, and I thought he was unbelievable. Sort of really strong left foot, up and down, played left wing at one point, left back at another point. Just a really good player, but it's just not going to work for him here. So similar to Reece Cole, he might go up to Scotland and then sort of find his feet again and become the player he probably should be, and it's just unfortunate it's not with us, but wish him well as well.
Exactly. And then Kenny's Carroll, who signed from initially Oxford, I believe. We signed him from Oxford. Yeah, all these Oxford incomings. he's recently signed for Stevenage on a full time, so best of luck to him. And Mads Beck has gone out on loan to AFC Wimbledon, having signed a new contract until 2023. I think Mads Beck has got good potential. I don't know if he'll make it as a first team regular at Brentford, but he's certainly got the potential. Good left foot, very strong, good in the air.
He's already looking good at FC Wimbledon, to be fair. In that first game that he played, already looked like head and shoulders above that.
It's almost as if we went, sorry about force, here, have me back, have someone. But no, I think it'll be very, very interesting to see how he does.
Okay, in other news, kept hold of BMW, of course. Some other key players remaining at the club too. How important was that for this promotion push and potentially a first season in the Premier League next season to have kept hold of those players?
Yeah, it was huge. It was huge. I think Billy did a really good piece on Besotted, Pride of West London Besotted. It's just spoke about probably the timeline. I think the intention was always to keep them and say that we're going for promotion this year. No one's going anywhere. Please stay with us, and this is a really big year, and we've got a huge, huge chance. And I think they're talking in probabilities, like what was the chance previously of going up when we have lost the sort of Birmingham three. But now it's so the probability is there to go up. We look good, everything's right. So
we don't need to sell them this January.
Sometimes it can be taken out of your hands where they can want to go. It's not always about you. If they want to go, they can force moves. But I think everyone's really. There's a lot of harmony around the group. Everyone's sort of thinking together and thinking about promotion. And in the end, it proved that no one was going anywhere. And we're looking. I think we came out quite strong. That was the thinking, wasn't it? If we lost one of them, what would we do? Would we trigger some other events and get some others in? But keeping these three, it's probably the deadliest forward line in the league, and everyone would be pretty jealous that we've got them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, an incredible trio. Just before we move on, I was speaking to a couple of my Brentford mates after the victory that we're going to discuss later.
Wait, you have other Brentford mates?
I do, mates. Yeah, I do, mates. Sorry, I apologise.
Let's leave now.
Sorry. Charlie didn't, did he?
No.
But we were discussing just Brentford's attack, BMW, like we were just discussing then, and he did argue that he still wasn't comfortable with the front line as it was in terms of backup. Now, I said, surely Marcus Force is going to be the answer to that once he regains fitness, has a bit more experience. But he said, I would have liked us to have gone in the market and maybe got another striker.
Yeah, I think he wouldn't be alone. I think a lot of people would think that. The problem is, where do you go and who do you get in? So everyone's kind of forgotten about Davis Soglu. I think he's been on the cards for a while and he's here now, but I'm not sure where his position is. But I think he is very good at dribbling, so I think that's why you think of him as a winger. But he can play centre forward, so he gets a few games under his belt. That could be a Watkins understudy. If you bring someone in like a Lyle Taylor, for instance, it's really hard to sort of manage him. And what do you do? Do you keep him on the bench? Watkins plays almost every minute. He only comes off when we're 4-5-1 up. It's really hard to sort of keep the squad balanced. So don't waste loads of money on players who are probably quite expensive and also high contracts and just sit on the bench. You've got to make sure your squad's working hard.
Exactly. It's players like Ivan Toney was thrown around as well in a potential fee of $10 million. And it's what our directors of football at Brentford said when we sold Neil Malpe as well. It's like these strikers that get you the goals every single, 20 goals a season, they are expensive. They cost a lot of money. So are we willing to put that amount of money and that number of eggs in one basket, so to speak, or do we work with what we've got and try and develop our players? We've mentioned Halil Dervişoğlu. I've been very critical of Joel Valencia this season, and I think certainly against Hull he showed a lot of promise when he came on, admittedly against a poor side, which we'll talk about in a second. And we looked really, really good. I think we underestimate the power of some of the players we've got. Jan Zambrek as well. Boy, that guy can play football, and he can play up there. Mark Condes can operate up there. We are covered in terms of our backup. It's the fear of losing one of those front three to injury or to transfers. That's what plays on the minds of the Brentford fans.
Yep, indeed. Plenty to discuss, I'm sure, as the weeks go on, as that title chase continues. And it was continuing, of course, at the weekend at Hull, a thumping 5-1 victory of the Tigers. We're going to be talking about that next here on the Brentford Fan Show on Love Sport London.
Giving your team a voice, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport London. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from Besotted, Robin Hood, McMichael and Dave XG Anderson. We're going to get on to our review of that thumping win at Hull in a moment or two. But as per usual, the boys were in the pub after the game speaking to fans from both teams about the game.
It's the perfect tonic to wash down the defeat on Tuesday. I thought we were coasting in the first half. We obviously conceded a really naff goal, and I didn't think we ever really hit our stride, really hit into gear. Second half, I thought the midfield tightened up a little bit, got a bit more solid, there was a bit more fluidity to our passing. But at the end of the day, the result was the important thing. We needed to get a win in order to get ourselves back on track. But I think it's the momentum that we've built up with it. 5-1 win, we'll get onto the scorers in a second, I'm sure. But yeah, just it's such a valuable way in which we have bounced back. So yeah, we got the result, but the performance, particularly in the second half as well, yeah, it's just wicked.
I was quite confident about going up to Hull. And I think we just needed a little bit. I thought we were a bit rusty, maybe. And I was a bit in doubt as to whether resting so many players for the Leicester game and not maybe using some of the players who played against Leicester, against Forest. I was a little bit in doubt then. But I think today what we showed was that we can put a game behind us quickly, and that is a strength we haven't had before, really. And I think now we just... I think Frank Sykes comes up and says, right, now, come on, forget that game, let's do this one. And it was a brilliant performance, you know. And also, I think Benrahma was probably still a bit too under the weather, so to speak, after his dad died. Maybe he was plunged into it too early last week. But today, I mean, he just gave it everything, and it was fantastic. And I mean, a sublime move was the ball out to Rico. Rico looks up, crosses the ball, right on, bang on Ollie's head, you know. And I think that sort of summed up today's performance. It was that time. I mean, there were mistakes, right? Okay, well, at least he managed to get five this time when he made a mistake. But I think we just need to keep that, take it forward, and I think we'll well in there, you know. I mean, we're evens now to get promoted. It's quite amazing. We never thought we'd be that before, you know. But onwards and upwards.
A great comeback after the Tuesday night showing against Nottingham Forest. I think the Brentford played superbly. I think Hull showed nothing in the game at all. Benrahma, I think, was outstanding. Even the Jensens and your Pinnocks had superb, solid games. And it's a great comeback. There's 16 games to go, and you never know what's going to happen now. Anything can happen.
You know, it's okay to lose if you come back and win, and we need to win the next couple as well. So yeah, it's teed up really nicely. To score five away at Hull is incredible. It could have been 7, 8, 9. It could have been anything out up there today, and they only got a goal through some absolute fluke from David Reyes' fluff. So yeah, just incredible. It's now down to Leeds and West Brom and Fulham to do their part this afternoon. You can't ever say a bad thing about a 5-1 away win, so I'm not even going to get too critical. I'm too under the microscope about it. It's literally the perfect bounce back and the perfect result. So proud and so pleased for Sy Benrahma. You know, you could see what it meant to him and the way he celebrated for his father. So yeah, brilliant. Just a brilliant start to the day, mate.
The perfect bounce back, as that last fan said there. Indeed, it was. Also referencing Leeds, of course, saying it's up to Leeds and West Brom and Fulham to do what they got to do now. Now, two of those three won. One certainly did not, did they? At home to Wigan. We're going to be talking about that, of course, XG Dave, on Friday. You're going to be here for the Leeds United fan show.
Yeah, a little bit of cross fan pod music stuff going on.
Short-term loan.
Short-term loan. Really short. Yeah, hopefully goes well.
Yeah. But the outstanding name that was mentioned there really was Sy Benrahma. Hat-trick, a lift of the shirt. It was an eventful day for him, wasn't it, Robin?
It was indeed. I was absolutely gushing and so pleased and so chuffed for the man. For context, I'm sure everyone's already aware, you know, losing your father a couple of weeks ago and then playing against Forest on Tuesday, you could see he probably wasn't emotionally ready. He was just a little bit off the pace of it, which is completely understandable. And I think to go away like that, and the first goal was enough. I think that, we know, you could see the emotion just lift off of his shoulders, and he looked to the heavens and he took his shirt off and it said "Je t'aime, papa," in memory of his father. It was just such a beautiful, that goal itself was a beautiful moment. Then he got the second goal, and he slid, and he'd obviously already been booked, which we will very much get onto, as I say it through gritted teeth, about the booking for his celebration. He then slid in front of the fans and then just lifted it up a little bit to reveal the message again, celebrated with the fans. So he had his one moment from his first goal, just for him. Then he had the moment with the fans for that. And then I was just saying, I really wanted to get a hat-trick. I really wanted to get a hat-trick. Turning to Lane and saying, it just needs to get this hat-trick. And then he got it, and he just ran over to Thomas Frank, and there was this wonderful long embrace, and I was so proud to be a Brentford fan. I was so pleased for Sy Benrahma. I'm so humbled and full of respect for that man. It's unbelievable. I thought, and you know, and it wasn't just the three goals he scored. It was the manner in which he performed. It was the tenacity. It was the skills. It was the daring. Yeah, I'm starting to get emotional now.
It was, it was a lovely moment.
It really was. It was just, it sort of cut you a bit deep, didn't it? You looked at it and you thought, this is, sometimes you probably underestimate the mindset of these professional footballers, like what they go through, and then doing something, performing the way they do under that sort of pressure, it just, yeah, I don't know how he did it, but he held it together so well. And I think I would have broken down after that first goal. I'd have just asked to be subbed off. I don't think I'd have played on, but he goes on to humiliate Hull even more, and it's just insane.
I'm just going to say it now. I've always thought he was one of the best players to I've ever seen in a Brentford shirt. Just in terms of his sheer daringness and the ability to do the things that he does, his goal scoring, his creativity, and his general work rate as well. He's come under a bit of criticism, and I've noted it a couple of times, that he appears to be a little bit stroppy and a little bit almost arrogant when he's not had a good game or when he's not playing well and he tries a bit too hard. After what he's been through and the performance, it shows, first of all, that he's a team player, because he doesn't just try it all himself. He does create assists. He does bring other players into the game because of the manner in which he's played. I'd say he's now officially the best ever player for Brentford.
Wow.
I don't think there is another player. Hotter was amazing, don't get me wrong. And I think you look back at the days of people like Neil Smiley and Dean Holdsworth and things like that. He's my best ever Brentford player. And he could not play another game this season. He could be sold tomorrow. He'll always go down for me.
Yeah, wow, that is some accolade.
So that's funny. I don't know if it's an accolade. Some bloke with no hair just said that Saeed Benrahma is a damn good footballer.
Your lack of hair's got nothing to do with it. Come on.
he's brilliant. Sorry.
I kind of back that up as well. I think he's the best player we've ever seen there. And there's a couple of players we have now. You look at them and you think they could play in sort of not only the top of the Premier League, but they could play in the Champions League as well. It's that level of quality. And I think him and Bomber are those two players. But probably the best. Hotter was the other one, but I think Benrahma is definitely.
No, Sod Hotter. I don't know who you're talking about.
And in terms of, just very quickly touching on the goals, the first one, yes, slightly fortunate, a bit of a defensive lapse of concentration, I suppose you could say. The second one, beautiful technique to finish off that cutback from Buemo. And then the third one, I know that it was kind of an open goal, but the ability, the know-how to go, I need to lift this top bin.
So you can
great
tell he
finish.
Does that in training for fun. Anything rolled to him on the back post is just going in. You can tell the way he sort of finished that. But it's also that first time finish that came into the box with the second one. Yeah, really good to note that out. That finish, he's done that many a time before. He did it at Forest last season. He did it at Rotherham. I think he got two in one game. It's the quality of, I think this is something Brentford look at, is how players strike the ball first time when it comes into the box. Who's suffering big time at Leeds right now? It's Bamford. He can't hit anything that comes towards him. I know it's sometimes on his right foot, but that clean striking and the first time, as soon as he's in the box, is really an underrated skill, and a lot of Brentford players are really good at it. Benrahma's just obviously the absolute the pinnacle, but yeah, he's an absolute quality player, isn't he?
He is. So we're going to have to move on, fellas, to the other 2 points involving Saeed Benrahma at the weekend. One you've already mentioned, Robin, and that was the yellow card.
Yeah, so Saeed Benrahma had an undershirt on underneath his jersey, basically saying "Je t'aime, papa," as a tribute to his dad. Now he took the shirt off and got down onto his knees and pointed at the heavens and was huddled around by his teammates. Now I understand the referee's got a job to do, and I understand that the referee had to follow the letter of the law that if you remove your jersey, you will be booked as a result of that. Have some compassion. The guy lost his father. He wasn't advertising anything. It wasn't branded. It wasn't political, it wasn't slur, it wasn't slander, it was a tribute to his dad. Now I understand the referee has a job to do, but surely take context into consideration and understand, because what in any way was that offensive to anyone? It really, really got on my nerves, and I think that rule needs to be reviewed.
I agree with you. The rule does need to be reviewed. In defence of the referee, referees get assessed, don't they? And if they don't
apply the
laws of the game, they are then... What it then takes is a referee to actually turn around and go, do you know what, I don't care, punish me. I don't care, because I'm not going to give him a yellow card.
And he'll be the greatest referee ever.
An absolute legend. He'd go down in history. But yeah,
it's not blaming the referee there. I'm blaming the rule.
The rules are wrong. Yeah. But you can't really ask the referee to sort of judge each sort of message that he sees in that exact moment. It's not fair on them, really. The rules.
Puts the thing and says, I like sandwiches. No, I don't like sandwiches. Yellow card.
Exactly. Yeah, the rules need altering. I mean, as long as it's no sort of, not, you're not selling anything, or it's not sort of, not an issue, basically.
Yeah.
Then that shouldn't be allowed. But messages to your loved ones are pretty
should
okay.
not be a problem. I always thought the rule was first enforced because it was a case of bearing skin and it kind of being something that was offensive. So now when players are just wearing Under Armour,
Also, players at the end of the games take their jerseys off and they've got the heart rate monitors and things like that underneath after the game.
It's ridiculous. Well, I mean, it's a bygone rule set for a different time that doesn't really have much sense now, really.
Absolutely. We'll swiftly move on from it then and just quickly discuss the trailing elbow on Stephen Kingsley, who did fall to the floor in quite the heap.
Yeah, I don't think it was an elbow. I think personally, if you look at the footage quite closely, Side Benrahma's running towards the direction of play and Stephen Kingsley is walking sort of back into position at left back. Now, Side Benrahma continues his stride. He doesn't break stride. And Stephen Kingsley suddenly realises, oh, I'm actually a bit central and a bit deep here. So turns and unintentionally headbutts Side Benrahma's forearm. An upper arm. It's Side Benrahma does not change direction, change course, or he is looking at the play. And I think, the referee didn't punish him for it. He didn't really get admonished by Hull City or anything else after that.
No.
But I think a fair few Leeds fans had a few words to say on Twitter about it, if that's the best way of putting it. But he can occasionally take a knock and go down a little bit easily in order to get a free kick. But he's not a dirty player like that.
No, definitely not.
He did react as well instantly, didn't he? And went over to Kingsley and apologised for what was seemingly an accident. Now, for a period in the game, there was not a scare, I suppose, but it was just a one-goal advantage that Brentford held, of course. Ryan Tafazoli with a speculative pass, a terrible pass, in fact, that went straight to the feet of David Raya and then subsequently into David Raya's goal. We're going to discuss that in a minute, but on the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks, we spoke to former Brentford goalkeeper Richard Lee. Here's what he had to say on the incident.
First and foremost, I feel like I do this with a lot of goalkeepers, but it's certainly true in David's case. Fantastic season. You know, I think the response to this error for me said a lot. The amount of Brentford fans that, and obviously I'm still connected with a lot of Brentford fans on social media, that straight away jumped to his defence, because he has been phenomenal this season. And certainly the way that Brentford play, he's the perfect fit. He is getting a lot of interest from Premier League clubs, and rightly so. However, this wasn't a particularly pleasant moment. The ironic thing is that David Raya is known for being fantastic with his feet. Mm. You know, his distribution. And if anything, my only comment here is I just think it's overconfidence. You know, a ball's fired through from Ryan Tafazoli. And it's interesting. When you see it from behind the goal, looking at the entire pitch, Ryan Tafazoli's hit this ball forward and turned away in disgust at himself, because it was a dreadful ball that he's played through. And David Raya, rather than just deciding to pick it up, like most goalkeepers would, he's obviously very confident with his feet, was going to take a touch to look to play. And I guess he's already thinking about what he's next to do. And it just goes straight through him. Just misses his touch completely, turns around, scampers back, can't get there. It's in the net. You can see how disappointed he was, but straight away all the Brentford players come over to him and make a point of, you know, that don't worry about it, it's one of those things. And as you say, in the end, they end up winning 5-1, so it's not necessarily too much of an issue.
That was ex-Brentford goalkeeper Richard Lee there, just assessing the David Raya error from the weekend. Robin, you were shaking your head in some parts of that. Didn't agree with that?
I wouldn't say over. He mentioned that he felt it was a little bit of overconfidence. It's not overconfident to try and control a trickling ball. He just made a mistake. It was a loss of concentration, I think, more than a sense of overconfidence. The key thing is David Raya has made a couple of errors this season that have led to goals, but only one of them has really cost us points. Every other game we've actually gone on to win it because we've been very, very good defensively. And I think it was a lack of concentration. It was a mistake. He won't make many more of them.
Touch wood.
I'm gonna chalk it up to just one of those things. Really.
Yeah, I think the stats show that Raya's sort of short passing is just I think it's like second or third best in the league for like short passes completed. So we know he's got a really good touch and he's great with his feet. He's had some scary moments where he's actually used skills to get beyond players
and he's done it every time.
He's done it absolutely fine. There's been a couple of moments where something has slipped under his foot and he's had to sort of jog back. But I think it's just I do think it was a concentration thing, because the ball took so long to get to him. He'd already probably thought he's actually quite, if you watch him play, he could probably play defensive midfield.
He was probably thinking
four moves ahead about where he was going to pass it, who was going to pass it beyond there. And it just kind of just had too much time.
He was so aghast at the sheer severity of how poor the pass was that he just thought, I'll tell you what, that poor guy, I'm going to give him a goal. Yeah, I'm not going to read too much into it.
Gents, we're going to hear from Thomas Frank in a moment or two, but just quickly before we move on from the whole game, they had been decimated really on deadline day, losing Jared Bowen, losing Kamil Kwizicki. I know they brought in Marcus Madison and a couple of others as well, but this was a very weak whole side, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was weak hole. I think also tactically a bit naive. So this is what we're speaking about. So if you want, in the 7 days, we basically had a microcosm of how you play against Brentford and how you shouldn't. So Forest is the exact blueprint. Give up the ball, sit deep, really sort of compact and don't give up as much space and try and hit us on the break. Whereas Hull just opened the game up and tried to play us. And the teams that do that are not ever going to beat us. They're just not. We're not going to get beaten by a team who wants to come out of a shootout. If it's a high volume shot game, we're going to probably come out in the end. There's only a couple of teams, maybe Leeds, who could actually outshoot us and outscore us.
Yeah, I think we went up against a very, very well drilled side in Nottingham Forest, and then we went up against a team that were very, very open against Hull, in Hull City. They were tactically naive. They were. They were depleted slightly. I think Bobby Hadgraft said on our post-match podcast from Saturday that the mental state of losing Jarrod Bowen and Grzycki was probably more damaging than them actually being on the pitch, and they wouldn't have actually been on the pitch. They wouldn't have actually made a difference if they'd been on the pitch. But yeah, really good win, nonetheless. Yep,
absolutely. That was Robin Hood McMichael. This is Thomas Frank.
The one thing I will praise the most from this game was the mentality from the boys. Again, bounce back from a defeat. I think we lost 8 games 1-0 this season, which is unbelievable. But even how emotional or frustrating that had been, every single time they just step up next game and we are bang on. And it is impressive to go here and win 5-1 away to home. I think, honestly, we should have been up by 3 at least in the first half, because I think on the final third we were, of course, massive quality when you score 5 goals in a game. We should in some ways have done even more, which sounds crazy.
And a hat-trick for Saeed today after a very tough time for him.
Yeah, I'm so pleased that he planned that little stunt with his a quote to his dad. And I'm just pleased that, you know, he could show it, because he's an emotional person. So I'm glad that he could get that out there. But a hat-trick was maybe a little bit more what he had hoped for. I should be just take the emotional part of it and only look on the player, Saeed Benrahma. I actually want a little bit more in terms of goal and assist. And we got that today, of course, in abundance. But in general, I think he's done a good season. But I think there's even more in him, and that's some of the bits he showed today. I think one thing was that we wanted to bounce back and show that mentality today. Next thing, we want to bounce back at Griffin Park, because that is our home, that's our fortress, and that was another bit why I was so annoying losing to Nottingham. I was so disappointed, because come on, we're playing at Griffin Park, we can't lose that. But of course, it can if we're not switched on or we're not on the top of our game, and we need to take this performance, but have that constantly attitude of staying humble but confident, and need to go into the next game.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's a Brentford fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from Besotted. We've got about eight, nine minutes or so to go, so we're going to have a bit of a look back at the season and a look ahead to what is coming. 30 games in, Robin, 16 to go. How are you rating the season thus far?
So far, it's been an incredible season. I think it's been one of those seasons where things just seem to be going our way. It had a bit of a rocky start, a bit of a sort of didn't quite get off the mark as we'd like to have done. But no, I think I'm really enjoying it so far. What do you make of it, Dave?
Well, yeah, I'm enjoying it as well. But yeah, I've got a bit of a question for you. And Matt, actually, you can listen into this one if you want to, see if you can figure this out. So what do all these games have in common? So think about...
XG Dave's taken over.
The team that comes first. Team that comes first is at home. So Brentford v Birmingham, Brentford v Stoke, Brentford v Bristol City, Brentford v Huddersfield, Brentford v Nottingham Forest, and then away is now. So Leeds v Brentford, Preston v Brentford, Forest v Brentford, West Brom v Brentford, Mill v Brentford, and Huddersfield v Brentford. What have they got in common?
1-0.
1-0. I was going to say they were all 1-0 losses for Brentford.
Close. But they're all, well, none of the Brentford haven't won any of those games. So none of those games have been won by Brentford. But the common thing throughout that, so what we're talking about, sort of our season to and fro between Chalk and Cheese and Forest and Hull, is Forest have kept the game. So if we look at expected goals, we look at total expected goals for both teams. So combined, so say for instance, Forest get 0.7, we get 0.7, that's 0.4. So all of those games have had around a 0.5, 0.4, and that sort of XG for both teams. Brentford cannot win games where the games are that sort of tight. So we can't get beyond, unless a game is sort of around 0.3, 0.2, 0.5, or much higher than those low, tight games. And Frank speaks about this. we struggled to turn that into a victory. Those cloggy games. So all of those sides, and unfortunately, we need to find a way to win those games. So that's how probably we're going to finish. We need to finish the season better and actually find a way to win those games. But you look puzzled about.
No, not puzzled at all. I'm actually quite fascinated about it. I'm into it. I'm into the stats.
Basically, and long and short of this is our weakness is those teams that just sit deep and defend, and it's been our weakness for a long time actually. But our one weakness this season, looking back at it, is we aren't very good at conceding the first goal into a victory. That's the key thing, and it's teams like Leeds and Nottingham Forest that are better at it than us, aren't they?
There's a few teams that are really good at it, but yeah, just think, if you think it's sort of low XG values, so keep the shots low, keep the values of the shots low, and we can't come out on top of those games. When the game does get opened up and there's lots of shots, and combined it's sort of a high XG value in a game, we can come out on top of that, but it's how do we turn those tight games into a win? So we have played a couple of those teams twice, but we've got a few more of them looking forward, so we've got to play Cardiff again, Charlton are another one that could keep it tight against us. We've got to go to. Well, we've played Bristol twice. Who's another one that's going to be sort of a bit tricky? There's a few.
Derby by that point, when you go to Derby.
Derby are quite. They're quite an open team. They're a team we'd love to play, so Derby are fine. QPR we've played twice now. Swans as well. But there's a few sort of in there still. Huddersfield have played twice, so we're lucky we don't have to play them. But we're trying to look at sort of, are there any. Not banana skins, but who are these teams that do want to just sort of suffocate us and not keep the game open, which is what we thrive and that's what we need.
Well, that's the thing. Dave and I just in the White Hart pub earlier on, we had a bit of a stat off, didn't we? We delved very, very deep into all the statistics and all the XG. And just as for those that aren't aware, we go to the White Hart pub. It's our White Hart Whisper. We talk about what we're going to do in this wonderful hour of talking about football and all things nonsense. And yeah, they're absolutely fantastic down there. And yeah, we discovered today they've got a chap called Jack who's a sort of not an avid Brentford fan, but he's been to a few games recently. He's actually going to Birmingham away as well. So yeah, but yeah, make sure you check out that pub. Great team, great food, great drinks.
Yeah.
And that formed the White Hart Whisper, and we started thinking, who are our key games moving forward, where we almost expect it to be difficult, not necessarily because of league position, but because of their real sort of the style and the nitty grittiness of the game. And I think that that Charlton one, I think, is an important one. But then I think the key games have got to be against Fulham and Leeds and West Brom.
Yeah, those are huge.
Just huge games.
If we come out of those on top, sort of automatics is really on it. They're going to be well. Hopefully they're not tight games. Hopefully they're open games, and we come out of them on top. But
yeah.
West Brom they've got the ability to sort of close it down and make it tight and frustrate us. So indeed, we'll have to see.
Absolutely. We'll be previewing the Leeds game, of course, next week on the eve of what is going to be a massive game at Griffin Park. But before that, Saturday, it is Middlesbrough. Of course, second game of the season, wasn't it? First win. Ollie Watkins' first goal of the season.
Absolutely. And a second win in a row away at Middlesbrough, which is unheard of for Brentford Football Club. It's a real bogey side. I'm feeling very confident. I don't know about you, Dave, but I'm feeling confident.
Yeah, I'm never very confident. I'm sort of confident. That's what I say.
Mildly confident.
Borough have had
your David Raya confident.
composed,
but could let a slip up.
Yeah, Middlesbrough have had a really big upturn, haven't they? They sort of went through a really dodgy patch, but they've got themselves a bit together now. I think we should have enough to beat them. It should be tricky, but I think we can come through and beat Middlesbrough. Yeah,
I think I'm foreseeing. Obviously, they've hit their stride in the second half of the season, which is always a good thing. You'd rather finish the season strongly than start it strongly. And I think they're riding a sort of a crest of the wave at the moment. I think, given that it's on home soil, and I think we'll be buoyed by the win against Hull. I think we're going to do them. I think it'll be a very tough game. Middlesbrough are always by default almost a tough game. Just I don't know what it is about it. Middlesbrough is just really, really difficult. Whether it's whoever the manager is, whoever the system and the style that they play, they are a very, very difficult team. My prediction, and going out on a limb, is 3-1 Brentford. It's probably my favourite scoreline.
3-1.
Not quite as confident. I'll go 2-1. 2-1 Brentford.
Beadle?
I would agree with you. Yeah, I think this will be quite open to people. Ravel Morrison might make his debut for Middlesbrough. Who knows? Yeah. But I think that, yes, they have had a good run, haven't they? There were four wins on the bounce, but I think they've stuttered slightly, four or five without a win now. So who knows whether the pressure will build on Jonathan Woodgate. That is occurring on Saturday, of course. We'll have all the reaction for that on the next Brentford Fan Show next Monday and looking ahead to the Leeds game. But before we go, fellas, the usual plugs, if you will.
Just a reminder that the Bezotted Christmas, the Bezotted social will be on Friday the 1st of May, the day before the last ever Griffin Park match. Make sure you get your tickets for that. We'll have our podcast live on Thursday at 7 a.m. It's the pre-Middlesbrough. Billy's going to have his Middlesbrough chums on their way down to London. Make sure you review and like our podcast on iTunes, Spotify and all platforms, and like us on the socials at Bezotted on Twitter and Facebook.
Lovely.
Cracking
Very
stuff.
Quickly, before we finally finish, when Billy has his chums down, do they join you in the pub as well?
Yeah, they do.
It's the
wonder of Billy. It's the wonder of Bezotted. It connects football fans across the country and across the globe. That's why we do it.
Wonderful stuff. What a way to finish, Jens. Yeah. That should be the finishing motto of every single show that we do.
No, just our one.
This has been the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport. Like I said, we'll be back next Monday at 8 p.m. here on Love Sport London, looking ahead to that game with Leeds.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. We'll be right back.